It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Undefeated here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, Dr. Judy, unafeared individual. You know, we were very, very saddened to hear that David passed, and I saw the memorial that you and Mickey put together for, and Mickey's going to be on here another hour or so, and we're going to talk about that a little bit too. And your memorial to David was so inspiring. I thank you for doing that, taking the time to, I know, of course, you wanted to leave him something and memorialize him, but I'll tell you, you know, I've always been a David fan because all the years that you and I have talked, he's always been, you know, there getting dragged around and doing whatever, supporting you and been, yeah, whatever, as long as I'm with Judy, it's all good, you know? And hearing your story from the beginning, and you just know that he's there the whole time, you know? I'm like, David! You the man, David, you know? So this is, and you talked about how he passed and so on, and I just want to give you an opportunity. There's a lot to talk about, and you've been busy with things, and the world's changing rapidly. What did you want to say before we move on to that? I wanted to give you an opportunity to, you know, memorialize David just a little bit more.
Well, you know, Ernie, as you just said, you've always been one of David's greatest fans, and I think, you know, with all the outpouring of love he and we always get from everyone, I think it was important to let everyone know, you know, the way we live is God's always in control, and we know there are no mistakes, and it could have ended very badly for us because most people don't get in that room, as we know, with the loved ones, and most people don't see, you know, I hate to say it, but the hospital staff, you know, torturing these people. I was blessed by the events that I described in the film, and that I got in there and I got to share those last few days and basically keep him from getting poisoned with remdesivir. I wasn't able to, I didn't actually realize they hadn't given him his heart medication for the last 4 days. So they were attempting to say my David died of COVID, and he did not. And it might just be God. You know, God doesn't make mistakes. And I know my David would have died on December 1st, but they tried to kill him on November 27th. And God was good to us. And I just wanted everyone to know, you know, now I see firsthand, if I'm Dr. Judy and I can't stop, you know, my, the torture of my loved one, I can't even imagine what people have been through the last year.
Yes. That is the fact that you can sympathize directly and empathize with people from experience. How do you put this? There's no replacement for personal experience as a doctor, a scientist, and talking about all of this. And even though he may not have died of the COVID, you know exactly the hospital's attitude towards pay. How did you, I know it wasn't easy for you just to even go in there and be with them. You know, you kind of muscled your way, in, something. How'd that happen?
That was just literally a miracle because I couldn't get in because I, they just turned the music up here.
You're fine.
All right. So I couldn't get in. I was kept out for about 48 hours. Most people know David hears through a hearing aid in his cell phone. So he didn't have a charger. They wouldn't let us take anything in. They wouldn't even let us in the hospital. They stood on the sidewalk, which is, you know, and just horrific. You know, there's no way in the planet. David had was COVID positive. He was, you know, and this is what we feel is it was actually an attack on Christians because we had his full immunization paper, the I had COVID last year, the I have antibodies, that I have my booster hydroxychloroquine, that I'm fully immunized according to my God and my religious beliefs. You know, and it's almost like the minute they saw that piece of paper, it's like, let's, you know, and there are no mistakes, you know, on that plane in Santa Barbara last year, people know who I am. And, you know, it's, you know, David and I lived that way every day. We knew any day from the day I was jailed, November 18, 2011, you know, we were told when, you know, when all of this happened, you know, you do anything and you'll never see each other again. So we've lived that way ever since I was taken off the streets in 2011, but not out of my home, I should say, surrounded like we now see so many people, illegally taken. And you know, that's what's happening in these hospitals. This is literally murder. And you know, I didn't get in by anything other than the grace of God. For 2 days I had lawyers on the phone, and he called me once and he's like, he can hardly talk through the mask over his face, and there's this nurse in the background saying, you have COVID and you have to take remdesivir. And I could hear how upset he was. I'm trying to talk through this thing, and I said, honey, you don't have COVID, you're good, it's all good, we're gonna get in there soon, the lawyers are on the phone, I got Jim, I got it, Dr. Mike, we're okay, honey, I'm gonna be there soon. You know, but you could hear him, the anguish in his voice. And so, you know, God gave us a great gift, because by Monday morning, they were again calling me up and saying, he's failing, come down here, he's going to die. You have to put him on palliative care. It was his sons texting me saying, I'm on the phone with one doctor, and his sons texting me saying, Judy, where are you? He's calling for you. And I'm like, I'm at home, I'm a lawyer, you know, I'm not allowed in the hospital. And they said, get down there. And I don't know how those two young men got in that hospital. But, you know, Dr. Lori and I went down there, and she happened to be in scrubs getting ready to do a surgery. And, you know, we just walked in up the elevator and walked right in, maybe. And then the police were behind me, and Dr. Lori said, don't move, the police are out here. I don't care if you have to stay there, don't move. I don't care if you wet your pants, don't move. And I guarantee you, I didn't move or sleep. And then she talked to the police, and she's like, you're going to be the guy that takes that woman out of that room?
Oh.
He's like, I'm not going to be that guy.
Yeah,
so it's a beautiful story of just angels. And there were nurses. There was one male nurse we were told of, who they kept putting the remdesivir order in, trying to murder my husband. And this one nurse just kept pulling it out of the system, you know. So there were angels in that. There are angels in these hospitals. And you know, we're going to do everything we can to put criminal liability. You don't give a man a heart attack by keeping his blood pressure medicine away from him for 4 days while you try to poison him with remdesivir. And as I was flying to Phoenix for this meeting and flying to talk to Mickey Willis, I just happened to start listening to the Tony Fauci book, The Real Anthony Fauci, just listening on it on Audible on the plane. And I heard by about the third chapter, maybe not even that far in it, that all it takes to kill someone with remdesivir, especially the susceptible like David, all it takes to kill somebody is 3 days, and that'll make it look like COVID, and we all know there's no virus there and everything else. So that only angels got me in there. Only angels kept them from poisoning. He may have gotten one dose. We finally found a pathologist who would do an autopsy, and I asked for samples to be collected, and I'll prove beyond a shadow of a doubt there never was any SARS-CoV-2 in that man. If anything, it'll be the weaponized bioweapon they're calling a vaccine that they transmitted to, you know, this man and to millions of other Americans who denied the shot and were trusting their God. So, we know this is a war of principalities, and we know God wins, and I'm just... I'm fully supported by you and so many people of faith here at Turning Point USA with Charlie Kirk, our pastor Rob McCoy, just blessing us, and we know we'll get through this. We know.
Well, tell us
suffering.
About the event. Yeah, tell us about the event here in Phoenix. You know, you're coming here. What was it?
I've actually been here for the last couple of days, so it's called Turning Point USA, America Fest. It's a once a year. There were 10,000 people here. Charlie Kirk is the host, and Turning Point USA, and Fox Nation streaming live. Tucker Carlson was here.
Oh, that event. Okay, I know what you're talking about. Oh, all right. Well, I didn't know you were part of that.
So the young people. Well, I wasn't, but Pastor Rob McCoy of Godspeak Church is my pastor, and when he heard that David, what had happened, he basically said, "Let me bless you and take you to this event. It'll cheer you up. Charlie Kirk needs to know your story. The 20-year-olds, the less than 30-year-olds need to know this story. They just don't know it because every one of them have fallen under the vaccine injury. You know, anybody under 30 has been force vaccinated their entire lives according to the laws of the state, so they don't appreciate the injury." So it was great blessing to get on a podcast with Charlie Kirk yesterday or the day before, and what's really important about that is Charlie didn't even know the depth of the plague of corruption, let's just say. He said, well, you know, sitting there, healthy 28-year-old, and he said, "Well, I had COVID. What's the big deal?" And I said, "Can you tell me the symptoms?" And he said, "Oh yeah, I lost my sense of taste and smell." And I said, "So you're Charlie Kirk, and you know all the fraud in every other part of America. There's no single virus that takes out your sense of taste and smell. Almost every cold, you get an upper respiratory infection all the time. So a whole generation has been told they had COVID if they lost their sense of taste and smell, and nothing could be farther from the truth. That's not a virus. You know, that's a lot of things. That's aluminum toxicity. That's poisoning. That's just the common cold. When you're congested and you don't feel good, nothing tastes good. So you just go get well and you sleep for a few days.
Yeah, I know. I think I lost taste and smell before. It was just never a big deal. It was called the cold, And so it's a generational psyop. And how did these young guys respond to you sharing this with them? Did you get any feedback from doing the show with them or... him, or what do you think is going to change?
I haven't gotten a lot of feedback yet because it's such a busy event. So you go pretty well nonstop. As you know, there's always a press row and things like that. So you're talking and you're working and you're talking to meeting people. I was blessed to meet a lot of really cool people. So this is going to be fun. And I think that's what Pastor Rob wanted, was for me to realize, it's going to be okay. I've got a lot of family in my church, and just get back to healing people, which is what I do. I haven't had a lot of feedback, but I do know. So we're going to be back here in Phoenix on January 14th, 13th, 14th, 15th for Clay Clark's Reawaken America. I don't have a location for that yet in my head, but I'll get that to you and we can advertise that. And what's nice about that is these two events, normally a lot of the same people appear, like me and Nick and General Flynn and, you know, different pastors appear at these things and are talking to everyone about, you know, we're one nation under God and our freedoms here in this country are given by God, not the government. You know, this has been our mission. But the Clay Clark audience misses that 20-something audience. So I think what's really important is not that necessarily everybody understood what I was saying in this conversation, because this generation has been told the buzzwords of I'm following the science.
Yeah.
And they don't know Judy Mikovits and show me the data. You're not following the science. You're following propaganda masquerading as science, or you wouldn't have a mask on. Follow the data.
Things are changing, and I went to see Spider-Man a couple nights ago with my 26-year-old niece that is dating, you know, a 30-year-old doctor, and she's had to go get her booster. So I'm just like, it's Christmas time. You're going on a date with your niece. How far do you go? I mean, but fortunately I had the newspaper, you know? So we've been, you know, very busy with that. And with the America Fest, they had talked to us about, we could go and show our face and distribute, do some activism, whatever, thinking about it. But they're very secret about it until right at the end. You got to get a ticket, and then, you know, right before they tell you where it's at. Where was it at? I don't even know where it was at.
Right. Oh, well, it was at the Phoenix Convention Center. I'm right near there right now, and in the hotel on the way out on the plane, as you can hear. Yeah. It's funny, they don't want to hear me, so they turned up the music.
Appreciate you doing it. You've always been really generous with, you know, we're in the limousine, we're on the car, we're in the taxi, we're in the Uber, we're in the, you know, I mean, we've, you know, you've always carved out little bits of time for us, and we really appreciate that. Whenever we travel on the Love Bus, we're going around, what happens is a lot of people ask a lot about you. They get their, our audience gets their information on this and the question and authority from your example. And this has been very inspiring for a lot of people. So I appreciate you taking this time. As time goes on, now it's starting to seem like cracks in the foundation of all this crap is starting to, you know, show. And with, you know, RFK Jr.'s book, your books, what's actually happening, you know, people's experiences. It's and then they're starting to find out that it's way less vaccinations than what they're saying, you know,
right,
around the world. They always said, and you always called that, you go, I don't think it's that many, you know. So
right.
It's been, you know, not near what they've been trying to convince everybody it's been. So what do you think is going to happen for 22? Because a lot of the stuff that we've done, we've set up for 22. You know, our whole thing has been, all right, and in 22, Donna and I come back to Phoenix. We're doing some local activism stuff. We're going to start, you know, building our life again here with family and everything. And we got some conditions. You know, it's like, nope. I'm not going to go quietly, you know, in the corner until. I got a whole bunch of untils. Well, what do you think is going to be the legacy of 22? What's going, you know, is it tipping? Are they just going to get more draconian? They're going, damn it, this here 45 says you got to do what we say. What do you think is going to happen? What are you feeling?
I really feel like 22 is God wins. 22 is God and country and our revolution, which, you know, wins. We've never been the silent majority, and you know, we're not silent. You know, we're we're winning. I mean, when you saw 12,000 20-year-olds in a full stadium and people stepping up and, you know, the focus of all of the meetings I've been to, let's just say in the last 6 months, is at the community level, at the voting level. You know, we don't care about the feds. What we care about is getting people on these school boards, getting people to run for community office, for city council, for state government, for state positions. Mama's Bear standing up again. And getting people to speak out. You know, I was, you know, telling this audience and telling Charlie Kerr that in fact I was 24 years old the first time Tony Fauci, evil Tony Fauci, tried to get me to renounce the truth. Tried to get me, a 24-year-old kid just out of college, to do something unethical, which, you know, could have, you know, further changed the world or murdered more people than he actually has, which is hard to believe, you know, so that kids right now know, you know, high school kids. I was the student school board member in high school. And they always had a student on the school board. And so getting back into community, and this was 1975, 1976, I was the student school board member. So we've always been spiritually aware and gubernatorial engaged. That's, we're engaged in the systems. Christians have been told they can't be part of the system, that God's, you know, they're trying to take God out of our government, and we're one nation under God. And it's simply not happening. So in 2022, at the community levels, we're going to start by taking back our communities. And basically, you know, God's already won. But you know, that's what 2022 is going to be, the take back of our country, what it was supposed to be, one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. And it was a beautiful and healing thing, just as Pastor Rob thought, for me to be honored to come here and talk with Charlie Kirk and get on the podcast and introduce this topic to a large part of our population, who are really the people that need to get in there and run for these offices.
You know, that is such a very good thing to have been able to express, is that at 24, you yourself, you know, were presented with, you know, on the cliff, all this could be yours if, you know, it's kind of the same thing happened when I was like 28, you know, well, if you'd only go along with, and just some people just don't, you know, and it's good to highlight those experiences that you have with this crowd. And that's what our Pirates Without Borders books were about. You know, it's you go to these conferences and these coders sitting in the corner on their $4,000 laptop, you know, coding the future, and some venture capitalist wants them to, you know, forge another link in the blockchain to the crown, and you're going, look, you're the ones that are doing this, stop, you know. But they don't know until you explain it to them and you give them an example. You know, this is, I'm glad you did it, you know, and you know, with David gone now, how does it change your life in the fight? You know, I mean, he was such a support for you, but, you know, does it free you a little bit more? Are you looking to do different things? What's going to change in 22?
Well, sure. For me personally, it changes everything, because it allows me, and I know that David didn't want to hold me back. David, I knew, you know, he's 20 years older than me. He had COPD since he was 30 years old. You know, I've always had to protect my David, and his health has gotten better every year as I've moved him away from the medical model, stopped the shots, to getting the mercury out of his mouth, getting the filling, you know, just everything that I learned each step of the way. David's gotten healthier, enjoyed maybe many more years than he would have. And most of his family, in fact, when I first married him, I was going to retire at 55 and him at 75. I mean, he was already retired when I met him. He would have been 75, and we were just going to travel the world and enjoy retirement, appreciating that both his parents died at 75. None of his sibling died at 69. They literally just sit down in the chair and die, and their heart gives out. David used every bit of energy, and we, you know, I was jailed at 73, so we never got you know, that dream became a nightmare as I lost everything. But it also stayed a dream because of David, because of, you know, even you know that, you know, you were one of the few people that would talk to me, that gave me a voice. So I was always in the isolation and that people now call COVID-19. And we learned to have just pure joy. David was like a kid at Christmas. Oh, goody, goody, my Judy's home. She didn't have to go to work. So we started like, yeah, we get to watch Sunday night football and we don't have to worry about getting up at 4 a.m. So, you know, looking at the gifts in everything is what David did best. And that's what, you know, everybody thinks it's just me. And he's just this guy, but not just this guy.
No. I could tell that early on. You know, we've been talking for, 6-7 years on a regular basis. And David was always there in the background doing, supporting, being. And I got really pry early on. You know, I wanted to get to know you and David and say, all right, so how's this work? David's there, man. David's, yeah, whatever. You know, as long as I'm with Judy, it's all good, you know. So it was yeah. Beautiful to see you guys as a team doing this. And, of course, you're the front. But I always gave props to David because I go, hey, I know how, because Donna, you know, Donna's always back there doing stuff. You know, I know the importance of a spouse being supportive. And I'm glad I feel good. My own selfish desire, my emotions, that I feel good that I shared with him how much I appreciated what he did and helped with you, you know, and I know the power of that. And so that's and when he went, were you with him in the last, when he finally passed?
Oh, absolutely. I never left him by his side. So, yeah, in fact, I jumped in bed with him the last night when we were going to go home and he was well. He sat up, his lungs were clear. And, you know, and so, you know, we were fine. We just, so the next morning, actually, he went into AFib. And woke up and found him on the respirator again, which I didn't expect. And the nurse told me he stopped breathing during the night. So, you know, God, you know, I fell asleep for the first time in like 3 days. I'm good at not going to sleep. They call me a camel. I don't go to sleep. You know, I worked with Ebola all the time. There's no way I don't know how to stay with these patients. And so, yeah, so we really enjoyed the last 24 hours in chats and music. And,
what a blessing. That is so awesome that he didn't go out alone with, what a terrible, this whole healthcare system is. Do you see changes in the hospitals and the staff? Are they just all brainwashed? Are they following orders? Or they, you know, all the good people have left? Are there anybody left? What do you think?
Oh no, there were a lot of angels there. Even the doctor was like, the doctors came in that Wednesday night after I pretty well nursed him back to sitting up eating chocolate pudding, laughing and talking with his sons through the door. And the doctors were like, they had no idea who I was. And they're like, who, you know, because I never turned around. I listened to Dr. Lori. I just stayed right there. And the nurses and the doctors were coming in there and they could see it. And they're like, you know, who are you and what are you doing? It said, it's easy with David. All you do is just love these people back. They're fine. You just have to take them out of that fear. You know, there was an evil nurse in there saying, oh, you have COVID. And he called me and he was upset when I couldn't get in the hospital on that Sunday. And he called me and he was upset. You could tell how upset he was. And I said, honey, you don't have COVID. You're just fine. And you could hear in the back of me, you have COVID, you have to take remdesivir. And I said, honey, don't listen to Nurse Ratchet. And he laughed.
Now, there is financial incentives for that too, right? I mean, the reason they push this stuff,
absolutely.
There's some, you know, talk about that a little bit. That was the one thing that early on when we were first conversing, the financial incentives to the pediatricians and to the doctors and the hospitals when they get, and I go, that's all you got to tell a libertarian. You know, it's what you reward and what you punish. It's financial incentives, and you already see where this is going, you know? And I'm like, oh.
Well, sure. It's $40,000 to intubate them. They tried over and over to intubate him. They, you know, they took us in when I finally got in that Monday morning. They took us into conference room and I said, no, we can talk right in here with him. You know, and they're like, no, we need to talk about this in the conference room. And there's this person, it wasn't the doctor, this woman who came in, and she's the palliative care director, you know, the going in. And I call her Kevorkian because
she's the money maker.
Saying, kill your spouse. He's a money maker, and they're dripping continuous drip morphine and all. Yeah, that's going to kill them. And I said, no, I'm not going to kill my husband. I'm not going to stop him from seeing his God in his last days. We're not afraid of you. He's not going to suffer. I'll be with him. And, you know, I just basically said no and walked out of that room and walked right into his room. So, yeah, financial incentives. You betcha, $40,000 for the intubation. And more importantly, you know, with my husband on ivermectin, on hydroxychloroquine, with antibodies, having been immunized, having been, he's the most susceptible with COD, COPD. We know when he coughed twice last year and it could, you know, and he developed the antibodies. We knew that. And so he was immunized according to his God. And so you could see the, we're, oh boy, we got a live one here. They used that proof of immunization according to their God and their beliefs. No emergency inoculations. You won't be using those toxic drugs on my husband. So, and that, you know, I can't even tell you. I had no idea. Until I read Bobby's book, that it only took 3 days to kill a susceptible patient with COVID, with remdesivir, and call it COVID, and it would have looked physically like COVID. And this was, I mean, I cry thinking of it because I didn't know, and I'm just thankful, you know, for Bobby and that, because I didn't have anything to do with that book. As most people know now, I told him all I could tell him when he was doing the early research. So, at any rate,
you got to get going.
I'm gonna walk out, so I gotta get going.
Well, you know, one thing as you go,
I can take the video off and talk to
you. Yeah, I'm so sad that we didn't get to, you know, physically meet here. If I'd known you around, but yeah, I know you've been busy and everything. We'll catch you when you come back. But you know, Dr. Judy, we love you.
Right.
You've been so helpful to us and our friends and our audience on this. You've made all the extra effort, just like you're doing now, to do this. David was a big supporter of you doing this, and we big supporter of him supporting you. It's been awesome, you know, and I'm glad that you're getting to have your voice and all
Merry
of this.
Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas. We're allowed to say it, gosh darn it.
Christmas.
You know?
Merry Christmas. We'll see you here in Phoenix January 13th. In the evening through the 17th for Clay Clark's Reawaken America. We're going to bring hockey, you know, professional hockey star Brendan Witt with us. We've got the nephews here. Let's have a party and we'll see you at Clay Clark.
Yeah, send it all, Donna. We'll promote it and we'll make sure we make time to be able to press flash, give you a big hug. Dr. Judy Mikovits, a hero to humanity, and, you know, her husband that made it possible to do it with a smile on her face the way David did, and we're all big fans, and thank you for making the time for us, Dr. Judy. Have a safe flight.
Okay, thanks, Ernie. Talk soon.
Bye.
Well,
that is, you know, freaking awesome. You know, to have her she's been very generous with her time, you know, and it was because early on when this was happening, we had already started doing could see it was going to be this vaccine push, a pandemic thing, back in 2009 with H1N1. So we had set up a lot of infrastructure to be able to push back on this stuff. And we had a lot of successes early on in pushing this back from first responders that they're trying to force in Arizona. And so when this came again, we knew what this was going to be. They're bringing the big guns this time. They were not going to back down. This was, you know, they got learnified, you know, first time where the resistance was going to be coming from. And so I knew that Dr. Judy was one of those rare cases to where they knew. They had personal knowledge. They were there when it was happening with HIV, with the AIDS thing, and what kind of person Dr. Fauci was. And I didn't really understand who he was, because Dr. Judy, she get a lot real scientific and so on. I have her co-author on the book Plague, Kent Heckenlively, explain. I go, what's she talking about? You know? So it was, the story was, there were two people involved that kept coming up. Frank Rossetti was her mentor and guy that really understood virology and what was happening with HIV and Fauci's role and everybody. You know, he's a, you know, in the system. Well, she is an idealistic young, like she was saying, 24-year-old, like these young kids she's talking to now, and saying, look, you know, you can see, they go, the easy way or the hard way? And you give a young person a choice, even though they know, once they make that decision, they go down the dark side, forever will it dominate their path. Well, she didn't allow that to happen. She's a Christian woman, a principal. That's why when you have FBI negotiators in some kind of, you know, I don't know, let's say hostage crisis, somebody's not coming out and saying, bite me, and I don't, you know, accept or respect or acknowledge your authority over me, and I answer to a higher authority. Well, they take that negotiator book and throw it out, and they got another one. Literally. There is a whole other way when you're dealing with someone that's not afraid of you and answers to a higher authority. They start negotiating on a total different level or quoting scripture to you or doing something. Dr. Judy wasn't susceptible to that. You know, she's like, nah, I'm good. Right, and arrest me, shoot me, do the time. What? And David supported her. You know, he's, yep, whatever. You know, as long as I'm with you and we're hanging, it's all good. They live in a houseboat. They move from here. They're constantly moving, you know, renting, Airbnb-ing, traveling, and so on. It's not like they couldn't find her. It just got to the point. And one of the things that I've learned over the years is I go, you know, if you're going to be on the list, be on top of the list. It's safer there. So I felt that she was way safer being out and open and in the public a lot. So we had her on almost every week for years. And I just said, at one time we did her every month, every couple of weeks, and things just started getting fine. I go, no, we need regular, you know, update. I'd just have her on just to chat, you know, just to, you know, whatever she's doing. We'd ask questions. The audience, you know, would always email me about different stuff to make sure I ask and such. And then we had problems with friends or, you know, family members or, you know, a lot of, she was always very generous with her time. She'd always talk and never asked for any compensation. You know, a lot of people, they just give her money and do stuff anyway. But it was just out of love. You know, that was one of the, when we talk about the love illusion or love bus and, you know, love being a powerful weapon, Dr. Judy was a manifestation of that. And we were so supportive of her because she was so supportive of all of us. So whenever I would go where, you know, I have an audience, you know, I go to an event or go, you know, out here doing activism in Arizona or New Hampshire or Washington or something like that, she'd always come up. People would listen to what she had to say because who else was telling people what was going on and how? And the real science of it, okay? You know, as a scientist that was a virologist doing all this, studying the body and how the immune system works, and her wrecking what made her famous, you know, or infamous, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, was that she understood what was happening with the vaccines and how it was impacting people's health, you know, how it was working, what they were doing. We even had a cartoonist did one of the slides that she uses, because it's the mouse-o-matic. You know, it's just, you put them in a blender, you know, the cells, you put in some stuff, you take you out, and you inject it in babies. I mean, you know, that was it. It was kind of an assembly line thing that Athena had did the cartoon for, and like it while we were doing the show. I mean, she now is a professional cartoonist for newspapers. She just whip it out. Boom. And then she had it colorized. Judy did, and they put it in the book and everything. She used it in her presentations because it's simple illustration of what's been going on. She understood the science behind it, and she also understood, and this is what, you know, I'm glad finally came out more, and with RFK Jr.'s book, you know, the real Tony Fauci, and what James Corbett did on Fauci and Gates and all these guys, is that it didn't come out, because it was my fault, you know. I didn't make it clear you know, what was going on. I kept asking a lot of questions because I didn't really understand, and it took years for me to get the role that Tony Fauci had before he got up on the podium and, you know, did his soapbox thing for Trump administration if I'm the guy, you know. And then it became easy. You go, oh, that guy. You know, then you start to understand the power and the role that he played in all of this, going way back with AIDS, HIV, and a bunch of other stuff, and how the finances, it was called the Dole something Act. And what it was, or Bush-Dole Act, I think it was. It's what? By Dole something. Yeah, and what it was is that there's legislation that created, not only do they not have liability for the vaccines, is that the government and Fauci and the doctors around, which is why he wanted to stop effective treatment that what Dr. Judy and Frank Rossetti were working on, because the Remdesivir or something, whatever else that they do, they get the patents on it as individuals with our tax money. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. So we pay taxes for medicine. Oh, we need more. You know, I remember when Gene Wilder's wife, she was on Saturday Night Live, Rosanna Dana, I can't remember her name, Gilda Radner. She got cervical cancer and died, and it wasn't diagnosed right, and she knew there was a problem. Finally, it got terminal, and she died. And Gene Wilder, he'd go to Congress. I mean, we got to have more research on cancer. How come we should have known, and we didn't? You got to spend more tax money. Well, assuming that would have been a solution, what happens? Well, we spend the money, and then some government doctor gets the patent, gets the credit for it, and they make all the profit. And then once they got the profit, they want that one to be the solution and nothing else. You know, solution. Well, Peter McCullough, is that what it was? The guy that was on Joe Rogan. I left it up a whole day. I put it at the top. I saw it the day before. We'd, you know, seen this before, you know, wandering around and so on. And they had a full interview where it wasn't censored, a location that we had that could stay up there. And I put it at the top of Freedom's Phoenix. Like, it was all yesterday or the day before. And here is a qualified scientist, respected, reviewed journal of blah, 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 blah. And he's going, yeah, well, let me tell you what's really going on. And we had Dr. David Martin going on back in patents and how they're making money. All this stuff we knew up here, that these guys, it's a money thing. And they are willing to sacrifice you and your family, everything, totally destroy families, you know, with, you know, disabilities like autism and chronic fatigue syndrome, which was Judy's, you know, thing. And all of this stuff for them individually, as an industry, and they cultivated all the people they needed to put in position to be able to support that, be it county attorneys, you know, clipboard carrying, shiny badge wearing, you know, health officials of whatever. This has been so obvious for a lot of us that were activists on the street of the mechanism that they do this, and the psyop and the lies with social media and with media. So, and it's not just this issue. See, that's why when we, as activists, where you get really popular, a lot of people and support, money and all that, Second Amendment, you know, healthcare was also a big deal. And then, you know, there's a lot of things. But we had it more general. It was freedom in general. It was the right to choose. You know, you get to make a decision about you and your family and your community. You. That was the promise. The Declaration of Independence. That was the promise. That's the deal. You know, I'm going, okay. So we never really, even though we probably would have been able to be one of the biggest whatever advocacy groups and well-funded, but that wasn't really the problem. The problem was a much wider thing. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? And one thing that I wanted to make sure that people understood, it's the Freedom's Phoenix. From all of this, there's going to be a rebirth of a foundational understanding of what the real problem is. Problem is us. The problem is we delegated authority to someone else on something. The problem is that we need to be able to pursue our own happiness. And that takes a form in all kinds of ways. A lot of times it's just free market. You know, just leave me alone and the market will decide. It's way smarter than any politician. And the only thing I need some politician or government to do is to protect that. The free market, to protect that. Protect that. The freedom of individuals to make choices with their own effort and money and resources on what they do with their lives, their pursuit of individual happiness. This is something that, you know, Judy and David understood, and they were willing to fight for the freedom to not be forced, because they knew the negative of getting a lot of these vaccines and all this stuff. They're going, no, they're hurting. They're not helping. They're hurting people. They're creating symptoms that then, they come in with, you know, a drug that has 15 gazillion disclaimers of how you're going to die, but they're running around in fields and bouncing around with butterflies and so on. And, you know, you ask your doctor. Well, the doctor is getting paid, you know. So this is why the opioid problem, you know, became such a big deal. It was financial incentives. So I got a boat. I need a boat. You know, I got to get a certain percentage of my children, my pediatric practice, that I got to have fully vaccinated for me to get my bonuses. That's what that was all about. So our kids just say, and we're done. So our grandkids, they don't go to the doctor. They got some natural path of somebody that's there trying to maintain their health, not you know, profit from, you know, them being sick. You know, there was, you know, different cultures, you pay a doctor, I don't know, the witch doctor or whatever, to keep you well. Not pay him when you're sick. What's the incentive? They want you sick. You know, it's so messed up. And we're learning this stuff. And like Dr. Judy says, 22 is the great way. Once you start to realize that these people are psychopaths, sociopaths, they have no empathy, and they're willing to do any and everything to individually or for their collective benefit from. Once good people realize that this is a spiritual battle, it's a principled battle, when you have people of faith and people of principle come together and go, really? You're going to make us, really? You want to, really? All right, game on. And with people like Dr. Judy and her David, it was much easier for us. And I latched on to that because I wanted to encourage, like she was saying, you know, early on, you know, nobody would talk to her. And we did the Vaccine Education Summit because of her. And she, you know, featured in both of them. And the difference between the two, one in fall of 16 and the one in the fall of 19, right before all this stuff, COVID stuff happened, was a stark difference in the awakening of people, what was really going on. And it doesn't matter what the numbers they keep telling you. They'll go, oh yeah, we got 70%, we got to get to 77%, we got percent and 100% of this country, and most of them, and they're lining up and sheep in the cattle chute of whatever the heck. And I'm going, nah, I don't think so. Come to find out, it's not near as high. And certainly, even the people that have complied, not enthusiastically, okay? Not many. I mean, they'll put TV camera on the people, you know, sprinting to the front of the line and offering up their children to the altar of, you know, Baal or something. You know, here, you know, take my kid. And they'll emphasize that, but is that most Americans? Is that really what's going on? I don't think so. That's not my impression. You know, you know, we may be biased, you know, being out, but I was looking for that bias. Did these people even exist? You know, are they out in America? So far, we've been pretty impressed. Now, there's a lot of other people, but they're not persuasive. The closest you can get to them is, well, I'm following the science. Okay, one, do you even know what that means and what the science is? You know, how are you getting it? Some guy, you know, Fauci gets up there and says, you know, my daughter, we put it up on the site a little bit. Yesterday she said, and when she's home, you know, not because she's got COVID, one of her coworkers that they share a break room with, you know, had it. So the other guy, all right, I got to tell this story. This is good. She's home the week before the holidays, not working, getting paid, not worried. I said, you got to go home now because this guy tested positive for COVID. And, they're in aerospace, and so the Biden administration putting all the pressure on, you got to take the test. If you're not going to get the vaccine, you got to take the test, all-time test, vaccine test, you know, or fill out religious exemptions and so on. Well, they denied the exemptions. It's like, yeah, says who? So they started pushing it, and we have another family member that works at the same place, and my son's father-in-law. And she goes, you know, I want to retract my request for exemption. I don't need you deciding my religious exemption. I went, no, you can't retract it. You already did it. Fine, whatever. I don't give a crap what you guys say. And they go, well, email every day. Oh, you got to take the test. Where's your test? You didn't take. No, I'm not taking tests. Well, you get the vaccine to prove. No, I'm not doing that either. Not doing it. Well, we're going to have it. Well, do what you're going to do, but I ain't doing it. And they know. And of course, you know, they may know who her parents are and stuff and whatever. They'll bring it. And I don't. There's no plan to do anything. It's their bid. They want to be stupid. Get rid of a great employee. Be my guest. But in the break room, the three people affected, one guy tested for COVID, so the other two that shared that break room, you know, you're not socially distanced enough, you're more than 15 minutes, go home, okay? They're not bothering her about this, but the other two guys had gotten their first round of shots. Okay, you want me to get a shot? I got a shot. Now you got to get the second shot, then a booster shot, and this shot, they go, yeah, they weren't enthusiastic. Because they didn't get their additional shots, they're in threat of getting fired for not getting their boosters. And this is one of the supervisors that's making this decision, making a big deal out of it, is leaving the company because he's not supportive of the vaccine. So what makes sense of that? You know what? It's this policy. It's this human resources. It's their, you know, like the hospital employee or director of, we're going to make more money, or compliance authority with. And this is why a lot of small businesses can't compete with these big ones. They have to have such a team and human resources or lawyers or whatever to make decisions, you know, to be and administrate their interface with the government for their compliance officer. I remember in blockchain when crypto was getting going, oh, a company, well, who's your compliance officer? You can't have a company unless you got a compliance officer, the guy that, you know, Zieg Heil and clicks his heels and does what the government says. What the hell do you think crypto was all about? It was not that. And that's why they went after Morpheus so much, that did a couple of years in prison, because he's like, well, I'm just banker. I'm a local Bitcoin guy. I buy, sell, help. I'm not, you know, with your compliance officer. That's the whole point of crypto. You don't need a compliance officer. It just works. There's nothing you can do about it. So they freaked out. That was the thing. They tried to make him a financial institution. I'm not. And that didn't stick. You know, they got him for, you know, money laundering of undercover agent said he's Russian drug dealer. Russian drug dealers go around telling you they're Russian drug dealers. So he didn't believe him. You know, he's just like, yeah, whatever. I don't need to hear that crap. And because he didn't deny the transaction, boom, gotcha. See? They just entrap you. They'll just make it up as they go. So this is our experience with, you know, how this process is being done. They use examples, you know, to try and get their way. And they will be draconian as heck. And Judy was one of those examples. And she never cracked. Because of religious beliefs, because of her principles, and because other people have principle supporting her. Distributing her book, buying her book, publishing her book, you know, talking about her book, going on shows. And as time goes on, people like Mickey that's coming on, Mickey Wells coming on here. When's he coming on?
11 a.m.
Okay, so it's like 2 hours from now. So, you know, it's 11 a.m. Arizona time. So this, I got time to go out and work on batteries. So then we'll have him come back and we'll give his perspective, because some of these people see what I see, a hero, and want to tell the story. Because they know how inspiring it is to have people that have stood up and in the face of all the adversity, because it was the right thing to do. And these bad guys don't understand that. They think there's something wrong with you, that they're, you know, why would you do, you know, why, Mr. Anderson, why do you persist? Because I choose to. Whatever reason you choose to, that's an individual thing, and they can't understand it. For me, it is a practical thing that I understand. Bullies bully who they think they can bully, while the bullying benefits the bully. You stand up to them, you give them a bloody nose, you don't You know, things may happen, but sooner or later, the injustice, just like the little girl in V for Vendetta, gets shot and it's on, you know? So there is always somebody that's representing us. That's representing, when I say, I mean humanity. You know, how like angels in anticipation, you know, our goals, our aspirations, inspirations. Humanity is freaking rocks, you know, and it just takes a few individuals to be able to have that. But what if they got the whole next generation in the classroom, BSing the crap out of them, and when they're not in the classroom, it's on their phone, their computer, their laptop, they're just being bombarded with entertainment, their movies, everything. I'm just, wow, it's amazing that we're able to be as sane as we are. Well, that's why we do a lot of what we do, because we understand the power of inspiration of individuals, and we highlight them that I think has the biggest impact, and we try and be the inspiration ourselves. So this has been a really good relationship. We'll always be good friends with Dr. Judy, and you know, we've hugged on each other enough to, you know that there's love there, you know, and not just for each other, but for what we do. And I am so glad that, and I, early on, I would always, you know, those that had been listening, you know, David be in the background, like, I know you're there, David, you're the man, you're the man, because he was so supportive of his wife and understood the mission. You know, whatever he could or couldn't do, he was definitely there, support, wasn't dragging, you know, wouldn't be in a parachute, wasn't, you know, being a disincentive. He knew how important this was, and being support, you know, and that's, it's just so, it's, you know, there's a love story there. You know, Dr. Judy, the movie, is going to feature a lot of David, you watch. So this is an inspirational time for us. We're at the end of 21, and there's been a lot of things that have happened. It's just part of the tapestry. Each one of these little stories just keep adding. All the contributions that we've done, and Corbett, and Grove, and, you know, a lot of the other influencers, and Luke, and everything, and Tim Pool, and all that. We're just, you know, Joe Rogan. I mean, everybody. All of a sudden, it just kind of, you know, starts with the foundation. A lot of us street activists that aren't, you know, got all YouTubed and Googled up to be able on the platform of blah, blah, blah. We're creating other stuff. That's our role. We're creating other avenues, because I know those are getting shut down. And the ones that are there, you know, and have the voice, they're being inspired by these people with this information. The fact that Joe Rogan, you know, says, nah, I'm not going to do it your way. I'm going to do it my way, and I'm healed in a couple of days, and I'm good, and we're done. You know, oh, man, that just so pisses him off. And then have a platform to be able to talk to these people. And I was so encouraging of Dr. Judy, because she wasn't getting any love, you know, early on. But I understood, you know, that she was going to. And I go, you have to be out in the open as much as possible. You got to get this into the archive. We'll save it up on the IPFS. It won't go away. We'll make sure, you know, we have conferences. We'll bring in the other scientists. We'll encourage, you know, other, you have this material that people can see, and, you know, how you present yourself, and they'll start wanting you to come on, and then it just exploded. And that's why Dr. Judy has been, you know, such a good friend to the show and us, is because we understood early on the power that she had. And it's been our pleasure to bring this to our audience, but we're not the big, giant, super voice of whatever. What we are is the inspiration that you can be the voice. You. And we give you tools and information. So Freems Phoenix and the newspaper and the show and Pirates Letters and all that stuff is about. And, you know, the Love Bus Tour and the sign making, everything. We do that. Why? You think I'm, you know, going to, you know, change the world from the Love Bus? Yeah, probably, you know. But not because, you know, it's like the blimp. It wasn't, you know, the Ron Paul blimp. It wasn't the blimp. It was the people supporting the blimp. The people that were inspired by the blimp. The people that bypassed all that. That's why they hated it so much. The bag of, oh, that's a waste of time, money. Yeah, screw you. You have no idea the power of being inspired. And the youth. We have yet to get to the youth. That hasn't really happened yet. And when she's talking about the youth of these different festivals and events and so on going on, America Fest, we knew that we were told about that. I just, you know, the weekend before Christmas and Donna just finishing the newspaper, and they're very secretive about where it was and everything until it happens anyway. And we could have found out, but I'm, you know, let them do their thing. You know, we're not going to come in and, you know, muscle in under, you know, we might, sometimes we do different events and whatever, but, timing, you know, they, you know, Dr. If I'd known Dr. Judy was going to be there, I'd just gone just to see her. But, you know, she took care of business, you know, division of labor. One less thing I got to do, you know. So there is going to be a big change. But whenever there's a change, a tsunami, a wave of people, a shift, a paradigm shift in the public opinion, there's always somebody there that wants to take advantage of it. There's always someone there wanting to get your database. There's always somebody wanting your email and your phone number, and they're going to tell you what to do, as opposed to you making an individual, for individual selfish, your family reasons, to do something, to change minds, to add to the, you know, the solution, to be the solution. There's individual decisions is where it really makes a difference. And just being part of and, you know, $5 a month to some whatever the heck and database, if I vote and I have an opinion or what you say on Facebook is controlled by some other central authority that has no basis in the real principle behind it. It's just, you know, so we win. Ooh, more Republicans. Yay. You know, no, that's not it. You need to be engaged and informed at a personal level. You need to be able to advocate. If you can teach it, then you know it. So you need to have enough information, not just to repeat what somebody says, but to understand it and articulate and explain it to a child, a neighbor, a friend, a loved one. That's your Christmas present to the world. And Dr. Judy's been a big Christmas present to us. And the more of these people that we find and we help and support, it's just my little part of what we can do to encourage this kind of behavior. It's what gets rewarded and what gets punished. And we try and be the reward. You're being rewarded. You're given a voice. You're given some support. You're given an event. You're given some, you know, a sign. You're given something, you know, an article in the paper, an ad, whatever it is that we can, that little bit of inspiration, that little bit of support so that you'll go that one more mile. And then all of a sudden, boom shakalaka, you know, you're a big resource for the whole thing, which is, Dr. Judy is just one example that we've done this kind of stuff for, because I invest time and money in quality people with quality principles and qualities of character. Be that kind of character, and we can support you. You got something going on, you let us know. The platform is yours to play with. You know, every bit of power that I have as publisher on Freedom's Phoenix, everybody has. You can go on and write and do whatever you want. Be a reporter, submit articles, letters to the editor. We had a guy yesterday wrote a letter to the editor, and it was some glitch problem, you know, with how it posted going up. I mean, I saw it there. It's saved. But, you know, so we're on it. Derek's on it, man. Boom. Got to get that taken care of. Because we want you to be able to interface, and you be your own light. You can have your own special edition. All the powers I have of Freedom's Phoenix, you could have your own edition. That's what the Love Bus is. Second Amendment is for everyone. You know, Freedom Summit, all these things, Vaccine Education Summits, all these are special editions. The Love Bus Liberty Tour that you can just add on a page there, you can do. I give you permission, I push the button, boom, rock and roll. So we're going to start emphasizing these powers. We've had over a decade on Freedom's Phoenix more. The reason we haven't is because, you know, they, them, those going after, you know, the bots, you know, denial of service attacks. And so we do the infrastructure in the back to make it to where they can't do that anymore. Or when they do it, they make it go faster. Go ahead and DDoS me. Go ahead. All it does is propagate the files more on the nodes with IPFS. That's coming in 22. We're going, go ahead. Try it. All they'll do is make it go faster. They'll just replicate more nodes, because that was what the internet, that's why they call it the internet, the net. Whenever there's a break in communications, it saw that as, you know, a break in communications, so any censorship effort, it would route around it. It would make it better. It was, you couldn't stop it. So now they're trying to get that, so we make a whole bunch of nodes to where when you try and stop it or you're accessing to denial of service, it replicates it more. So we're going, okay. It's political activist judo. Use their strengths against them. You know, to take their weight and threat. You think we don't know? We know what's coming. And it's not going to be easy. But there are resources. There are people that understand. Later today, this afternoon, we'll be talking with Kingsley and Aaron Edwards from Float.app. You know, the Float social media that we're going to start working more with. They still had some back-end stuff, and everything's time. You know, I'm always happy that, you know, no rush. We just keep making progress forward. We'll put a little over here, a little effort over here, and then all of a sudden it starts to converge. And that is one thing that James Corbett has really been pushing for 22, the convergence, the overlapping, the combined effort that people is going to start hitting 22. And I'm glad to hear Dr. Judy kind of, you know, parrot that also. So buckle in. It's going to start getting even more interesting, but we always win. If humanity and the principles of freedom wasn't this powerful to be able to overcome this, we'd be extinct already. It would be, you know, not even understood by anybody. It would have been winked out a long time ago, because they, them, those that won't leave us alone have been trying for millennia. I mean, this has been the battle. And when the awareness comes in, spiritual aspect of humanity starts to realize how connected we really are and that we're fighting the same evil forces of, here we go. And you're going to witness that freedom's phoenix that we've been anticipating all this time. 22. If it's not 22, it definitely 22 is going to say it's going to be. I guarantee that. So here we go. Thanks for coming along for the ride and any support that you can give Dr. Judy at this time. You know, a little note, we got contact information in the archive. You know, this is, you see her, she's going to be appearing somewhere. Go and say, yeah, I'm here because, you know, Dr. Judy, because she deserves our support, just our encouragement. It's been amazing, you know, to watch the power and the energy. And we've done everything we could to help encourage that. And I know it's had some effect, but I mean, she's definitely got it in spades going on herself. And her David was very much a part of that also. Peace, guys. You know, we're going to be live streaming if we got decent bandwidth again with Mickey Wills, and that's going to be a very interesting conversation. And then how we're going to be taking the fight later today with Kingsley and Aaron Edwards from Float. Stay tuned. Peace.